Blog Talk Radio.
That's how we do it.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up on a 2-hour show and get the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. From sports medicine to sports veterans and greats, to 4 for 26 or the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five nights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yo, what up, people? It's Thursday, December 1st, 2011, and basketball is back. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm at the round table with my bros, Akil Bayon, Jimmy Williams, Paul Johnson, and B. Austin. We got a great show for you tonight. We're going to talk NBA and get you caught up with everything you need to know about the labor deal and the upcoming season. Of course, we want to hear from you tonight, so jump in that JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/The War Room, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call us on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we get into tonight's show, we want to give a shout-out to our Philly radio partners. Check out Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line on their new day and time of Tuesdays at 6 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. They had a great conversation this week with Rhea Hughes, the First Lady of Philly Sports, so make sure you catch that podcast on Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Smart Radio, or iTunes. They're all over the web just like we are. We want to thank Roy again for helping us hold down our Thanksgiving show. We had a blast. Our listeners had a blast, so look forward to more collaborations with our fam at the Broad Street line. Now, it's birthday time.
My birthday, yay!
What up, fellas? Y'all ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
You already know.
All right.
Basketball
so the,
I'm ahead of myself, good brother.
B-ball is back. The hell with all the haters. All right, birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon. That's 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. Call Lisa and get your wig done. The first birthday, fellas, is one Ivan Pudge Rodriguez Torres.
My birthday, yay!
All right, Pudge Rodriguez turns 40 today. Jimmy, what do you think of when you think of Pudge Rodriguez?
Yo, first off, I'm like, this dude has had a long career. He's a great catcher, great player. He's, you know, he's a catcher that bats close to 300 for his career, but,
right.
Yo, it seems like dude's been playing forever.
Yeah, Pudge seemed like he'd been in the league forever. I got Pudge going to the Hall of Fame. I guess I probably should have said that. We could have had a HOF or FOH on Pudge, but I got him going to the Hall. And, you know, he just wasted a year of his twilight years down in Washington last year. That deal is up, so hopefully he won't be subjected to Siberia again. But, Kill, what do you think of when you think of Pudge Rodriguez?
Yo, I think of the name of a catcher who has always been in – the news of baseball for like the last 20 years. I mean, he's 40. He has 13 gold gloves, 14 all-star appearances. And yo, he won the MVP in 99. And, you know, he's played for what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams. He's probably working on his eighth. So shout out to his career.
Yeah. Austin, what you got on Pudge Rodriguez?
Why the bull nickname is Pudge? He's a Pudge Packer.
No, Pudgey Rodriguez. All right, well, yeah, like he turned 40 today, so I guess he's a grown man. I'm a man. I'm 40. So the next birthday is one Derek Jabbar Gaffney.
My birthday, yay!
Jabbar Gaffney turns 31 today. Austin, what do you think of when you think of Jabbar Gaffney?
I would say overrated, but is he really rated?
I'm about to say, how?
very fast, decent hands, not necessarily a good route runner.
To his credit, he's having a pretty decent year with the Redskins, but he's reunited with his Florida quarterback, Rex Grossman. So So, you know, they play a little bit of buddy ball when they go out there. But, you know, he's having a pretty decent year. Jimmy, what do you think of when you think of Jabari Gaffney?
Yo, I actually don't even think about his pro career because he's been a disappointment. But when he played for Florida, he was beast-like. When he played with Steve Spurrier, yo, dude was a major collegiate football player, which is how he got in the league in the first place. But in terms of his NFL career, he's been like a journeyman. So, you know,
yeah, isn't he like Lito Shepard's cousin or something like that? Because Lito got him on the Eagles for that.
I mean,
that ain't hard to beat, but still. Jabari Gaffney.
Man, it seems like he keeps I know he was cooking us, the Cowboys, when we played the Redskins. It's like every time you think dude's career is over, he'll like have a big random game and you're like, yo, why is Jabari Gaffney getting off? So there you go.
Exactly. All right, so our next birthday is one Vincent Edward, better known as Bo Jackson. Bo turns 49 today. Bayon, what do you think of when you think of Bo Jackson?
Man, I think of the fresh Bo Jackson kicks that we used to buy in the 90s. And you had, like, all the different colors, the Bo Jackson 1s and the Bo Jackson 2s, and then like our last year of high school or something, they came back. You know, Bo, he made some good kicks, and he was a beast on football field and the baseball diamond, and too bad his career was cut short. Shout out to Bo Jackson and Brian Bosworth.
Yeah, I think Bo is actually one of the I think Bo is one of the greatest athletes I've ever seen. I mean, he was an all-star in football. He was an all-star in baseball. And like Kill said, if his career didn't get cut short, then, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. Who knows what he would have done.
Yo, I personally think of Tribe Called Quest. But I also think about just exactly what you said. He's probably one of the top three athletes I've ever seen play up there with, like, Deion. And I think Herschel's probably number one. And his ranked top five says the White Sox because he played for them. That moves him down my list to, like, number eight.
All right, so, Austin, you got something on Bo?
Bo knows kicks. I mean, so his kick game was major. And like the rest of y'all, yo, top five athlete I've ever seen. I remember he used to run through the line. And he would, like, truck linemen and truck linebackers. Then he would get to the safeties and corners, and he would either shake them or outrun them. And he was, like, 230.
Yo, so I don't know, Jack.
Kind of funny. But, yo, do not ask him about talent on the football field because, yo, his assessment of Cam Newton is a little Gruden-ish.
Yeah, a little Gruden-ish. A little Gruden-ish. All right, so our next birthday – actually, this is like double trouble right here. We got some twins in the building. Today, turning 49, we want to give a shout-out to Pamela and Paula McGee. If y'all don't know, Pamela McGee is the mother of NBA star JaVale McGee. They turned 49 today. Jimmy, what do you think of when you think of the McGee twins? All right, Austin, my bad.
Oh, no, it's cool. Cougar twins. I mean, they had major game, and I think they both knew Dr. J.
Yeah, hey, Jimmy, what do you think of when you think of the McGee twins?
Yo, major game. Like, yo, there's something. I remember at what was it? They played for USC when they won the chip,
right.
And they had a bomb squad back then, yo.
Yeah, they had the McGee twins.
They had a bomb squad.
They had Cynthia Cooper. They had Cheryl Miller. Like, yo, that team was tough.
Yo,
yeah,
that team could beat the Clippers at that time.
Yo, I think Cynthia Cooper could have played in the NBA, cuz. No real rap.
Yeah.
She'd be better than Royal Ivy. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You said Royal Ivy. Royal
yo,
Ivy. Royal Ivy will D you up.
I think of dominant, you know, dominant twins, basketball wise, you know, played at USC, then one of them played in the WNBA, and then had the WNBA been around earlier, they probably would have been able to set some records there. But also, I think that JaVale, her son, and our homie Omar McGee, and I guess Hoopin just runs in their family. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think of the dunk contest, because we all saw how, you know, she gave that little smooch to Doc. When she was greeting the judges that night, and I think JaVale actually got robbed in that dunk contest.
Yeah, he did.
Hey, Jim, we got a call on the line?
Yeah. Owen's on the line right now. Let me get him online. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
What's good, O? What's good with you, fam?
You.
What's up, O?
You got it, man.
What's going on?
We're just
giving your peoples a birthday shout-out.
Yeah, no doubt. Actually, I just talked to her, man, and she's getting on a plane, man, so she apologized. She definitely want to come on the show. She told me she definitely want to get down with y'all. They retiring her jersey and putting them in the Hall of Fame, her and her sister, in February. So she want to come on the show right before February. And
we definitely talk before then and speak that whole thing up.
Yeah, definitely.
If I'm not mistaken, I think they're the first family, like, in terms of having a mother in a WNBA and a son in the NBA. Like, I don't think that's ever been done.
I think that's the first.
No, that's the first, because it's a lot of father-son NBA combos. There's a few of those, but did read that this was the first mother-son WNBA NBA combo.
The question everybody wants to know, is, like, if the ball runs in your family like that, what kind of game you got? That's what the fans want to know.
I got a cool game. I can vouch for O.
I used to throw oops back at HU.
Now the athleticism runs in the family. That definitely runs in the family. Everybody in the family has like crazy bounce. I can't ignore that. But you know,
everybody in the family is like taller than O. But
yeah.
O get up there.
Everybody.
I keep it 100. I learned a lot of dirty little tricks from O.
He had the Midwest dirty tricks, man.
A lot of dirty.
So you're saying ball players from the Midwest play dirty? Is that what you said?
Yeah, okay. He taught us some Flint tricks, man.
Hey, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Omar will hack you while he got the ball.
What I learned. You want to get back at him? Wait till you get the ball. Don't do it on defense.
Hey, man. I got to keep up with the guys. I had to come with a little trick.
All right, well, thanks for calling, man. We're going to move on and get this on. But, yeah, make sure you set that up. We'd be happy to have
you
on
and talk
about that jersey. Hey, man,
no doubt, man. Happy to see
you,
Mike. All right, man. How do you guys think?
I'll be
safe.
All right, you too.
Thanks. All right. Hey, yo, I got real quick, fellas, I got a story playing up at Howard. And y'all remember the point guard from New York, I won't throw his name out there, he used to roast people in the gym like crazy, short cat with handles. So one day he was just cooking cats, like putting cats off the court left and right, like 2-3 games in a row. O hadn't played in like a month, came off the plane from like Flint or L.A., wherever he was coming from, or Florida. And then he just steps on the court, no warm-up, and he starts roasting my man. Like, I'm sitting here like, hold up. I watched our homie, the other cat, roast everybody, all oncomers, and then dude was like, he just took a back seat to O, and O just mopped up the floor with him. It was crazy.
Yeah, dude, I know exactly who he's talking about. I know exactly who that is. But real quick, to get out of these birthdays, we got a RIP birthday shout-out we want to give to William Ernest, better known as Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh would have turned 80 today. Everybody knows he's the innovator of the West Coast offense that a lot of NFL coaches from his tree are trying to run now. So rest in peace to Bill Walsh. He had a big impact on the game. So, Jimmy, you want to tell everybody what happened today and this week while they were on the grind?
Absolutely. While you were on the grind, is brought to you by PhillyAutoDesign.com. For all your car needs, visit the website at PhillyAutoDesign.com or visit WarRoomSports.com and click on the tab. Now, the first story I want to talk about is in reference to a blog that Dev put out this past week, which I've watched approximately 1,000 times. And that's one with Joe Kapp and Angelo Mosca, both 73 years old, former CFL players who had a beef for damn near 40 years. They were at a Legends event. And they got the ball, and although they're 73 years old. And the one boy, yo, hit him with a nice jab, Muhammad Ali-type jab. Like, yo, they was scrapping. These are 73-year-old men. Did you guys get a chance to see this video?
He followed that up with a nice left hand as he was going down, too, just for good measure.
Nice time,
listeners,
yo,
out there, if you haven't seen the video, just go to warroomsports.com. Click on the blog tab and just scroll down. It's like the second blog on that first page. You have to watch the video. It's hilarious. But did y'all watch it?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
all I can say from it is sportsmanship. That's what it's about. Sportsmanship.
Yo, that's what he screamed out after he knocked him out. He's screaming sportsmanship.
He gonna knock the ball out, then say sportsmanship.
Yeah,
but boy, they hit him with like a steel cane, though.
Yeah, but he dipped it. It hit his glasses and knocked his glasses off. Like, he's lucky. Because, like, another inch, you know.
Game.
Yeah, he dipped that, got his glasses knocked off. So without his glasses at 73 years old, he still had the vision to land a nice two.
Yeah, he was sharp.
And put dude under the stage. Because I think dude fell, like,
that,
under the stage.
Yo, that's probably why he landed, because he didn't have the glasses. He had the glasses.
I don't know. When his glasses got knocked off. It was probably like Rocky. He probably saw three of them, and he just, like, hit the
hit
one.
Hit the one in the middle. He was hitting for center mass.
Yeah, he hit the one in the middle.
But to tell the whole story, he did something that was sportsmanship. And so I understand why he was mad.
Yeah. I mean, because the people that don't know the backstory, like Jimmy said, they had this beef going back, like, 48 years because they were playing in a Grey Cup game in 1963, and that's like the CFL's version of the Super Bowl. So the guy Mosca, the one who got knocked out, he used to be a defensive tackle, and he hit their running back out of bounds late, put him out of the game, and they went on to win the game. So a lot of people, the team, the fans, they thought that dirty hit was the reason their team lost the Grey Cup, and they didn't shake hands. He wouldn't shake his hand after the game, and he wouldn't speak to him for the next 48 years. So they tried to get him together. He tried to offer him a flower as a peace offering. Dude basically told him to shove it up his ass. He hit him with the flower. He hit him with the cane, and that was all she wrote. Watch the
My
video.
My thing is, though, seriously, though, like, at what point do you let a grudge go? Like, you're talking about 48 years.
Well, I'm pretty sure they can let it go now.
I mean, outside of someone harming somebody in your family, like, do you think you can hold a grudge that long, 48 years, though, seriously?
Man,
Jimmy, he let the grudge go. He let the grudge go when he let his hands go.
now he can move on, huh? Anyway,
hey,
let's move on to
Jimmy,
another story.
Speaking of while you're on the ground, you know, they got Donovan McNabb live on ESPN right now. He's been released by the Vikings for those who
Nobody
want to
hear what he got to say.
Yeah, we'll talk about
him
later because he just made
I want to ask you guys about this. It's been a lot of college coaches moving already, and a lot of the Pac-10 schools seem to get a lot of new coaches, but there's been a bigger hire, one Urban Meyer. He's been hired as a new coach of the Ohio State University. What do you guys think about that, considering the way he left his last job?
Man, well, we can do this real quick, in my opinion, because, you know, first of all, the way he left his last job, he's talking about he wanted to be with his family and get his health together. That didn't last too long. You know, when a job that you once open up, I guess, you know, your family don't count. They just don't count anymore. But for him to take that job with all the attention that Ohio State was getting for the violations and things like that, someone had to assure him that nothing was going to come down the pike, like that whole thing was not going to be as big as we thought it was going to be, because why would you take that job if they were about to be in that kind of trouble?
Yeah, not only that, I heard some stuff behind the scenes that when he was in Florida, that he had issues with basically the Florida public school system, how most of the best players in the state, he couldn't get to qualify because of academics. So he was very frustrated with that whole scene. And also,
sure, they played
I'm not sure how true this is, but I heard that the SEC, in terms of academics, has lowered their standards, which has allowed them to become a dominant conference they are. So he wanted to be a part of a Big Ten school. He wanted to be part of a Big Ten school.
How much lower could the standards get in the SEC? Dang.
Hey, listen, man, I'm just telling you what I've heard. So I think that he's an Ohio guy.
They take your sixth grade transcripts.
Based on an expose that you did, Blueprint. Most Florida kids have been playing professionally since second grade. Anyway.
But that's why they can't read and write, huh? I mean,
Are they really eligible? If you've been playing professionally since second grade, you may not be eligible.
He wanted to get out of that environment. So basically, this is a job that he wanted. He's from Ohio, I believe. So, you know, if you're from Ohio, what's a bigger job than being the head coach of Ohio State?
Yeah, that's true.
But one of his daughters, still plays volleyball for Florida Gulf Coast University, a low D1 school. So I guess she'll stay there.
Yeah.
Had to keep her away from Florida, huh?
I want to get you guys' opinion on this story right here, specifically my man B. Austin. Pause that. Terrell Owens, T.O., they say right now he's earning a living by tweeting. That's right. He charges anywhere from $2,800 to $6,400 per tweet. So, you know, companies and people with small businesses, if you want to get your name out there, T.O. will tweet to his followers for you for between $2,800 and $6,400, depending upon what you want him to say. Austin, this is your homie. I mean, does it get any worse than this?
Hey, if you take the bottom line number and you say he gets about 4 tweets a week done, I mean, he's still making about $600K a year.
No,
I guess if you're able to generate revenue by doing this, it might be better than playing football.
Feel sorry for my man that he has, you know, this is how he has to get his primary income. Why can't T.O. get a run, man? Just like AI, T.O. can't get a run, man. You got
perception. Perception is an MF-er because although he has no on-the-field problems, he always performs. Some people throw up. He comes back from broken legs and balls out. It's kind of like he has, in a sense, done this to himself. Now, I'm not one to – I believe in living your life the way you want to live it, saying what you need to say as long as you deliver. And he has always delivered. Up until Cincinnati, he had 6 straight 100-yard games for the Bengals and took over the number one receiver slot. So he was obviously productive. But this is the cost of him developing the reputation that he has. People don't want to chance on him.
It's funny, Dev, because people often compare him to AI in terms of them having talent but having issues. But the difference is, you know, AI has literally gotten in trouble off the court.
Yeah.
He don't really get in trouble. He just run his mouth.
Except his rookie year. That was it. When they got caught with weed going down 95. But other than that,
he just run his mouth and try to off himself once in a while. But, I mean, that's his thing.
Or throw his wife out the crib, butt naked, and that's about it.
Oh, no, we're talking about T.O. That was A.I. throwing it.
Oh, T.O., not A.I.
T.O. just take too many pills at certain times, but that's his business. You don't get arrested.
The show is only 2 hours. We can't go down A.I.'s rap sheet. Anyway.
No.
That's what happens when you represent the people, the common man.
The Washington Capitals head coach, Bruce Bordeaux, was fired on Monday and then hired on Wednesday by the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. The Ducks coach, Randy Carlyle, was informed of his firing 40 minutes after last night's win over Montreal. Have you ever heard somebody get fired 40 minutes after a win?
Yo,
I have now.
That's hockey for you, man. Yo, first of all, Carlyle led the Anaheim Mighty Ducks to their only Stanley Cup championship in the history of the franchise back in 2007. He's their all-time winningest coach. Now, Boudreau, his resume, the best thing on his resume is that he was the first coach. He was the quickest coach to 200 wins. But that's all the Capitals did was win in the regular season. When they were expected to do anything in the playoffs, they choked year after year. So, you know, it seemed like they jumped on this dude because he was available, but is he really better than what you had? I guess we'll find out because he coaches his first game tomorrow night.
To the Andy Reid School of Coaching. Is that what you're saying?
Basically. Kill it in the regular season and do nothing when it counts. So.
Got himself
a new job, I guess.
Yo, but 40 minutes after window, you got to think they're joking when they call you with that, though. I mean, that's almost bad as the Chargers. The Chargers fired Schottenheimer. He went 14-2.
Yo, and the win was a 4-1 win. So, you know, it was a nice little blowout. They're feeling good about themselves. And they called him up like, man, way to go, but we're going to have to let you go, guys.
Like, yo, I always thought hockey had the most ridiculous firings. Like, they would fire cats. Like a team would be in the playoffs, they didn't fire them right before the first round game. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I do think it's crazy, but at the same time, I kind of like that. Because if you know you're going to get rid of them anyway... Like, yo, I hate the fact that you can't fire nobody during the season. Why not?
But, yo, right before the first – hey, yo, before the first round of the playoffs, like, before the series, y'all got to –
I'm not saying you can't, but usually they just let somebody on his staff replace him. Like, he's one of his underlings, so how much better is he going to do? But, we got to move on.
Yeah, no doubt. Anyway, that's what happened while you were on the grind. It's time to pass the grit knot.
All right, y'all, let's pass this rock real quick. If you don't know what Pass the Rock is, then you haven't been listening, and I'm not going to explain it. So I'm going to go ahead and bring the ball up and be the point guard today, and I'm going to tell y'all. Actually, I'm not mad today. I'm happy. It's a happy day for me because myself and all my brothers here in the war room are big basketball fans, and NBA basketball is back. So it's happy day, joyous occasion. And with that, I'm going to pass the rock to my man B. Austin, flying down the side of the court.
Oh, happy days. Come on with me, y'all. Oh, happy days. Okay. I'm not really mad at anything either. The NBA is back. I'll take 66 games over 82 because – most of the teams in the league are garbage anyway, so I don't need to see 82 games. And they need to contract the league still, but that's another issue. I'm just happy to have ball back. Miami's still not winning the chip. And if CP3 ends up a Nick, we have CP3 with not much defense. We got Amare with no defense. And we got Melo with absolutely no defense. So what does that mean? I'm just
okay. Good evening, War Room World. That's interesting about the NBA being back. I think if Chris Paul goes to the Knicks, I don't see them winning a chip either. Now, I just wanted to take some time to talk about Urban Meyer, who just took the job to coach the Ohio State University to the tune of 6 years and roughly $25 to $30 million, depending on incentives and bowl appearances. Now, we all know that Urban Meyer was very successful at the University of Florida, winning 2 national championships and coaching the most talked about quarterback of the last 6 weeks in the NFL, also known as Tim Winning Time Tebow. When Meyer stepped down at Florida, he said, "I've been Division I football coach for the last 25 years, and during that time, my primary focus has been helping my team win titles. I have thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it, and I am a fierce competitor to my core. At this time in my life, however, I appreciate the sacrifices my 24/7 profession has demanded of me, and I know it's time to put my focus on my family and my family life away from the field. The decision to step down was a difficult one." He later said, "But after spending more than 2 decades motivating and celebrating the young men I've been so proud to coach, I relished the opportunity to cheer for my 3 terrific kids as they compete in their own respective sports. I know how fortunate I am to be in a position to make this choice and to have a family that is so loving and supportive as my amazing wife and 3 children have been." Recently on Twitter, his daughter Gisela Meyer tweeted, well, when he stepped down to Florida, "Love being a part of the Gator Nation. Going to be a big change, but I'm ready to have Daddy back." This was after Meyer stepped down in Florida. Meyer went on to work as an analyst for ESPN for 2 college football seasons. Now, recently, Gisela Meyer tweeted, "Dear at ESPN, can I please have my dad back? Thanks." At the signing day of one of his daughters, who earned a scholarship to play volleyball at Division I college, the daughter said, "Mom, I love you, and thank you for all your help and for being there. Dad, you weren't there, but I love you." too. Meyer later said that those words cut him to the core, and he said that he wanted to be there for his young son, which is part of the reason why he stepped down in Florida. Meyer retired with a net worth of $18 million. Well, after signing a six-year multi-million dollar deal with Ohio State, it looks as if Urban Meyer will continue to make huge deposits in his bank account while withdrawing huge deposits from his family life. And with that, I will throw a basic chess pass to James Williams, JW the Blueprint.
Man, that's crazy. Like, I didn't hear that story, but I feel bad. You know, I don't even know what to say about that. That's crazy, yo. Anyway.
Be a father to your child.
What's up, woman world?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, how about that? Shout out to Ed OG and the Bulldogs. Yo, what's up, woman world? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. the Blueprint, a.k.a. War Room Jimmy. And this week, I want to briefly bring up two topics. I'll be very fast, though. The NBA is back. And I just want to apologize to Commissioner David Stern for all the disparaging remarks I made about him on the show and in the privacy of my own home. I'm very excited that we won't miss basketball this season. In fact, I'm more excited than Jerry Sandusky at a Little League soccer game.
Oh,
my God. Too soon? My fault. Anyway, I like the fact that the season has been reduced, and I personally believe that it makes for a more exciting season. Now, I know that football is America's sport, but here in the war room, basketball is what we like to call La Costa Nostra, this thing of ours. We all love hoops, and despite what some of you jerks say about you're not watching again, you're lying, and we all will be watching. Now, the last topic I want to bring up is Monday Night Football. I don't know whether I'm alone on this, but seriously, there needs to be a change with the broadcast team. I know that all broadcasters have their own style of broadcasting, but I am unable to watch the games without putting my TV on mute due to John Gruden and his fallacious style of broadcasting. What does Coach Gruden add to the game other than 2.5 hours of audibly expressing his fantasies about quarterbacks? What does he really bring to the table? It makes me very uncomfortable, and it's hard to watch Monday Night Football. Now, if any of you disagree with anything I said, then you corny. And for my Spanish homies out there, estoy niza. And if you don't know what that means, it means I'm nice. And with that, I dunk the rock and hand everything over to my man Sleek Number PJ.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yo,
Sleek Number PJ.
Yo, real quick, I was watching Monday night, and John Gruden said, Peyton stimulates Drew Brees. That's what he does. He stimulates him.
No, he said the defense like desires and loves their quarterback so much that they have to get this ball back for him.
Yo. Like you gotta get that ball. Yeah. Sleep Number P, tell these people how to get in touch with us.
Yeah, man. Y'all can check us out by going to our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. You can click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. And for general inquiries, you can always email us at info@warroomsports.com. Now, while you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy that cool War Room Sports merchandise. Then you can click the blog tab and read our latest sports articles in the All Fan Sports and War blog. Then you can click the respective icon to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android and Apple devices, and to watch our YouTube videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can just sign in through your Facebook or your Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. So call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when you're prompted, and if you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, so raise your hand and we might just call you.
Oh, man.
Holla.
All right, so let's get into this. Because we talked about Penn State situation and Sandusky and Joe Pa and all of those guys a couple of weeks ago. Let's talk about this Bernie Fine Syracuse situation. I'm sure everybody out there already knows what the deal is. Jim Boeheim's top assistant, Bernie Fine, he's under investigation now for fondling and molesting young boys. I don't know what these guys, like, what their, you know, what's their fascination with young boys, but let's talk about this. Bernie Fine was actually fired on Sunday. And did you guys hear the comments that Jim Boeheim made originally when the when this whole thing broke? I mean, because it's not like a Joe Pa situation where he heard information and didn't take it to the authorities, but he kind of broke bad when they first asked him about it, saying that the two cats, the two stepbrothers that came out against Bernie Fine, that they were lying. He actually called, he said it's a bunch of 1,000 lies. Motivated by money.
That was my only issue. Like, I understand that this is a close friend of yours. You know him for years. I understand having his back until you get all the facts, and that's no pun intended. But the way he called the accusers liars, that's the thing that bothered me. Like, yo, they're liars. Like, he didn't just say, like, yo, this is not true. He was going to think next.
Yeah, my thing is, why couldn't he just reserve or, you know, comment until he got the facts? He could have said something along the lines of, you know, this is my guy. I've known him for years. I'm sure he didn't do something like this. But like Jimmy just said, he just went at the accusers. Like, this is a lies motivated by money. Like, you know, I think he might have taken that comment too far. Anybody else got any thoughts on that?
Yo, I think there's one cat who came out who his story is looking questionable, and I'm not saying Boeheim may have been referring to that guy, but there's a guy who said he took a bus, a fan bus to Pitt, and then Bernie took him up in a hotel room and put his hands down his shorts and all of that. But then they're finding out that that story isn't really too credible. So maybe Boeheim, in his defense, maybe was referring to a case like that. But these other two guys, especially with the guy who supposedly slept with Bernie's wife and got molested by Bernie, like, his story seems real credible with the taped evidence.
Yeah. No, but that was the guy who started the whole thing. Like, the one that you mentioned with the bus to Pitt and all, that's like the latest, maybe not the latest now because, you know, people just come out of the woodworks, but that's one of the later people to come out. And but originally he was talking about the guy who was on the tape with his wife and his stepbrother. He was saying that, you know, they were lying and it was motivated by money. And if you didn't hear, he actually had to make an apology because of that tape. Now, ESPN had a tape that they've had since 2003 with the first accuser and Bernie's wife on there. And Bernie's wife is kind of acknowledging that she knew all this about her husband. Austin, you have some thoughts on that?
I heard the tape. It was very damaging.
Real crazy situation. I heard bits and pieces of the tape, and it was kind of like she was saying, yeah, I know, I bet he did, and he probably did thus and so, and he probably did it this way. And
she was shocked, though. She said, did he ask you for oil? The guy said, no. She was like, seriously?
She was like, and this is how, and this is probably how he, there's another angle to this that I don't think many people are talking about. But you know, one of our nemesis, I mean, a fellow member of the media, Jason Whitlock, is a little angry about how this whole thing was uncovered, because I think he feels like the correspondent Schwartz kind of is a part of this and kind of put Davis in a position where he could bring all of this to light. And, you know, journalists are always supposed to have an objective perspective, but he's saying that Schwartz and ESPN got involved in the story to make it happen. So how you guys feel about that?
First, I want to ask you why Jason Whitlock is your nemesis, but that's neither here nor there. But I have the actual quotes from the woman on the phone,
And remember we said after this evidence came out, that's when Boeheim went back and kind of apologized. He said that he deeply regretted any statement he made that might have been insensitive to victims of abuse. But on that phone call, Lori Fine, Bernie Fine's wife, said, "I know everything that went on, you know. I know everything that went on with him. Bernie has issues, maybe that he's not aware of, but he has issues. Bernie is also in denial. I think that he did the things he did, but he somehow, through his own mental telepathy, has erased them out of his mind." And then she said there might be others. So, and, you know, she tried to deny that that was her when it first came out, but ESPN hired a voice recognition expert to analyze the audio, and they matched it with her voice. Now, I mean,
well, first off, the biggest part of the story is that
what can you
people
got
to understand that Sandusky is dropping tapes right now, man.
Yeah.
Sandusky is like Nino Brown. He said he ain't going down by himself, yo. All them like when weirdos like to hang together. So they all know. You know what it is.
Yeah, but
how do you guys feel about ESPN? Are they kind of pushing this, or I should say not ESPN, but Schwartz? Is he kind of involved in this story a little too much?
That's a good question, because actually I shared somebody's MC from Everything Man Radio wrote a blog about it, saying, you know, if Joe Pa was fired, then ESPN should be fired. He's saying that people should boycott ESPN because they had this information since 2003 and they did nothing about it. They didn't hand the tapes over to the authorities or anything like that. Now, what Schwartz said in an interview was that journalists are not obligated to hand over any evidence to the authorities that they didn't create themselves, or that they didn't find or create themselves. But if we're talking on the whole Penn State thing, everybody was talking about, you know, everyone but the actual alleged, you know, Sandusky. Everybody was talking about Joe Pa so much because of the moral things that he didn't do. So wouldn't the same thing stand for Schwartz and ESPN, since they had this information since 2003? Like, how many kids could they have saved from being molested?
What they said is they had the tapes, but they were waiting for a second person to come out to supposedly give some credibility to the story.
You know, it depends. ESPN is a company, so I mean, they're to me is a little bit different. It depends upon how do you feel what companies' obligations are. I mean, the bottom line is you can look at it. You can go from like the Milton Friedman School of Economics. Their job is to make profit for their shareholders, and they really don't have that kind of obligation that say an educational institution does. I mean, it all depends upon how you look at it. I think that it is sad what happened, and what gets lost in all this is how many victims there are in. How we need to do a better job as a society of protecting children. Because if these two guys come out, you know it has to be a laundry list of, like, this going on with other schools, other universities. And, you know, hopefully that'll slow down with all this coming to light. But these people are sick, so it may not. But in terms of ESPN's blame, it depends upon what do you think their responsibility is.
I think that people make up organizations and institutions, whether you're looking at it from the commercial side or academia. So you have people within that have a social responsibility. We can't put those people behind a curtain and say this curtain is thus and so institution or thus and so brand, and so therefore absolving the brand of responsibility, because all organizations are made up of people. So at each point that this story was aware of it, then there's a level of responsibility.
So you're saying that people shouldn't have the ability to hide behind a corporation? Is that what you're saying?
Of course, maybe we're just saying that we bring this down to the
Schwartz level instead of the ESPN.
So you don't live in America.
Maybe it was his responsibility, and maybe
people were just screaming out ESPN
because, you know, that's who he works for. But maybe it was just
because
the guy called.
Now that's a different story. You're talking about just Schwartz. I'm talking about ESPN. ESPN as an entity. Because, I mean, this is America. We all hide behind corporations. I'm hiding behind free right now. But anyway, this is what we do as Americans in terms of corporations. It depends upon what you think your responsibility is. Now, if you want to go to Schwartz as a person.
It could be black and white, though, Jimmy. Because something is done as a practice doesn't make it right.
Absolutely, absolutely. I agree with that. But at the end of the day, it all goes to what your view is of a corporation. I mean, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm saying it is what it is.
Huh?
But if you want to talk about Schwartz as a person, what's his personal responsibility, that's different than what's ESPN's responsibility.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm not necessarily – I understand that you can't prosecute or fine the organization. Well, you could. But I guess I'm looking at it, if you have a group of 10 people and those 10 people become aware, because you slap a name on those 10 people and you create a corporate veil, doesn't absolve them of responsibility. So Schwartz is definitely the first line. He's the face of this. He holds, I would think, a moral obligation to do something where children are at risk. But then each person, just like in Joe Pa's case, because if that's the case, if you're looking at Joe Pa, he's really not responsible if you're setting a precedent. Joe didn't see it firsthand. Joe heard it.
But hold on, though. But now we're comparing.
So now everybody in ESPN that heard of this story had a moral obligation to check it out and see if it's validity and do something.
We're talking about a for-profit institution versus a state college.
State college is for-profit. Who told you the government wasn't for profit?
No. On paper they're not. On paper they're not. And on paper they have two different.
Man,
they have
come on,
two
let's
different
deal with realities.
No, but I am talking about reality. Reality is ESPN they have to answer to their shareholders. That's who they answer to. They have to answer to their shareholders. That is their obligation.
It could be said that the constituents are shareholders within a government.
It could be said, but that's not the case. I mean, the fact of the matter is...
I'm not a shareholder within...
Listen to what I'm saying. You're a shareholder in terms of how government operates and what they do for you as a taxpayer, but it's a lot different. The government's idea is not to make money for its shareholders. It's to provide services for you as a taxpayer, not to make profit. ESPN is ABC. ABC has to make profit, so they have a different responsibility when it comes to situations like this. If you want to talk about an individual's responsibility, it's different, but you're talking about going after ESPN as an entity. I mean, you can't really do that. You can't compare them to Penn State either.
I'm not really saying go after ESPN. I would leave that to greater minds than mine. But what I'm saying is that you've got a ton of people. We don't know who was aware of what at ESPN, and I think that anybody that had knowledge of this in 2003 has a level of culpability. You know, there's such
a moral standpoint. From a moral standpoint, is what you're saying?
From a moral standpoint, do you look at the guys like we'll just say Schwartz, since he got the knowledge, Mark Schwartz, he got it firsthand. Do you look at him being a worse figure than Joe Paterno in the Penn State situation? He was getting secondhand information from somebody who said they saw something. Schwartz got information from somebody who said they were molested, and he held on to the information, didn't do anything.
That does sound a little worse to me. And I'll go back to a conversation that you and I had. You said to one time, like, when you look at folks that. Anytime you're willing to judge Joe Paterno, Schwartz, or anyone else in these situations that did not commit the crime but had knowledge of it, it's kind of like whenever you walk down the street and you see a crime committed or something go on and you decide to walk by, you have a level of responsibility. Not legal, not something that's going to place you in prison but you have a moral obligation. You have something you could have done to make the situation better. Joe Pa is in a position where he's a figurehead, so he's getting all these arrows shot at him. We don't care who Schwartz is. He just gives us the news. Give us the news and shut up. But he's done something just as bad or worse Joe Paterno.
Okay, so what do you guys think? Oh, go ahead, PJ, I'm sorry.
Now, I was just going to say, yeah, like to what Brad is saying, I think because Joe Paterno was so big, like he is Penn State, even though he is working for an institution, people make almost Joe Pa synonymous with the name Penn State. So they use almost one and the same. So, but honestly, like what you were saying, Dev, I feel like you said, Joe Pa got it kind of secondhand, where Schwartz got it from the victim. So I don't know. I mean, I think
Joe Pa is considered an educator. And we hold educators in a different regard than we do a journalist. And I think that plays a big part of it.
He's a football coach.
Why do they consider him that? Because he works at a university?
They do. They consider most football coaches are considered educators.
Yeah, that's silly.
Like whether that's teaching people life skills or whatever it may be, but because you work at an institution and you're a football coach, they consider them educators.
That's
even
stupid.
If you see now? Even if you're a senile and nobody, like, no.
He
educated them on Alzheimer's.
So what do y'all think Boeheim falls in all of this? The question's been going around. They seem to have his back, and, you know, they're saying we're not going to let him go. But do you think precedent has been set? Do y'all think Boeheim deserves to lose his job or be forced to step down over this?
Not at all. Me, not at all.
I would agree with you and say not at all, because I didn't think Paterno deserved to be fired in that whole thing.
Right.
But I'm kind of like, if you're setting precedents and you're punishing people for the acts of somebody who used to work on their staff, then you may have to be consistent with that. So Jim Boeheim lose his job, and I don't think his role and Joe Paterno's role are the same, but I think they do have to look into it. You know.
I go back to what you made the most valid point in your first statement. I don't think Joe Paterno should have been fired.
I'm just talking about in the name of consistency, in the name of precedence, should they be even considered?
It's also something else at play here. Boeheim won a chip in 03. Last time Penn State won a chip was like 85, 86.
They won one in 93.
Whether you
want to
admit it or not.
Yo, I have an angle. Why does it seem like Boeheim and Joe Paterno have been coaching at their institutions almost as long or longer than, in Joe Paterno's case, than we've been alive, you know, so 30-plus years. So is there anything to coaches coaching for 30-plus years and their assistants being pedophiles? Not saying that should be the case all the time.
I'm sorry.
But that is eerily similar. Like, so coach is going to be getting fired after year 10. They're like, all right, this 10 years, all right, we need to bring in a new staff. You know what I mean?
But why is it always the assistant,
though?
No,
I think it's something to what you're saying.
Yeah, you would think it would be the head coach, though, because he spent the most time there. He's around young boys all the time. Like, why is it always the head assistant? Why is he always the scumbag? Like, I don't get it.
Yo, I mean, Jim Boeheim. Talk
about fornicating with you and letting you suck my.
Yo, Jim Boeheim is just as big a figurehead with Syracuse as Joe Pa is. I mean, they play on Jim Boeheim court. Like, yo, they literally play on a court named after him.
He's been coaching for 36 years there. He's been the head coach for 36 years.
So, I mean,
it's a valid point. I don't know what we can drag out of it in the next 30 seconds, but maybe we can think about that and see if we can come up with something.
Kill, basically what you're saying is after a certain amount of time, they, like, lose grip of what's going on around them in terms of, like, managers, so to speak, because, you know, it's a lot going on when you talk about recruiting and coaching them up and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, after a certain amount of time, they get lax, I guess.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Something like that. All right, well, we'll get back into it as more details come out, but right now, yeah.
Yes, let's talk some football. Before we do that, though, let's talk about this real quick. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done. So if you're lazy like I am, you need to get down with Audible. That's audibletrial.com/warroomsports. And you can listen to that from your iPhone, your Android, your BlackBerry, and, you know, step your game up because some of y'all need to start reading more. But with that being said, let's get into football. first thing I want to talk about is Tim Tebow, a.k.a. Leatherhead, wins the game.
Tebus.
Tebow.
He plays that leather helmet football.
Yeah,
we call him George Clooney in the war room.
I've accepted Tim Tebow as my savior and quarterback. I'm traveling to Minnesota this weekend, and I will see Tebow play the Vikings up close live because I'm a part of the Tebow. I'm a stan now. I'm a Stanley. So I know that makes a lot of people out there mad, but that's my whole point. So,
yo, I just like personally, and I'm a Broncos fan, but I like to see how angry other people get at somebody doing something unconventional and having success with it. I don't understand how much of a joy and pleasure it is, yo, to see people get so upset. And I mean, yo, people get angry. But Pete, let me ask you a question. What's your opinion so far?
Who?
You. What do you think about Tebow and what's going on?
Like you said, man, it's like it's Leatherhead football. It's like 1920s. Like, it's funny because I think when we talked about this one time before, I was just like, I don't even understand it. Like, you got to consider that the team is actually playing well, too. Like, you got to consider things like the defense and, you know, I can't explain the dude. Like, you'll see him, like I said, he'd be in the game, he'd giving out souvenirs for three quarters when he throws a pass. But when the game is on the line, or he needs the drive, or you know what I'm saying, or the fourth quarter comes, he turns into a different dude, man. And, I mean, it's
winning.
He does just enough, like, whether it's the long pass or he just drop back and head left or head right, get his run on, he's like a throwing fullback. But,
see, the thing about it is, what makes me excited is what you said, the defense. The Broncos' defense last year was horrid. I mean, and they went out and they hired a defensive coach, and he's coaching them up. The rookie's playing out of his mind, and the defense is playing well. And people also don't realize how good the offensive line is playing. They're blowing people off the ball, and, you know, as a team, they're playing a lot better. And the one thing that he doesn't do is he doesn't turn the ball over. Dude has, like, one turnover since he's been playing, and that includes fumbles and interceptions.
Yeah.
So when you have a defense that's playing that way, the one thing you don't want to do is put your team in a bad spot. So you're basically playing field position all game.
John 3:16 says that God loved the world. So never mind. Go ahead, man.
The only thing about that point, because I've heard people make it about him not turning the ball over, to be fair, when he misses by a mile.
Oh, that's
so
a good thing.
Like nobody's catching it. Nobody's catching his incompletion. So I wouldn't give
true.
I mean, Jimmy didn't say this, but I heard somebody else saying, like, you know, he's not turning the ball over, which means he's making great decisions. I don't think he's making great decisions. I just think that when he misses, nobody's going to
get
it.
Yeah, but also, but on the flip side of that, look at how many times he runs the ball and hasn't lost a fumble. So, I mean, that's
oh,
also
yeah.
something.
Oh, yeah,
that
counts, too. That counts, too. But because remember, I used to say the same thing about your boy McNabb when people used to talk about his ratio. There are reasons for some people's ratio. He used to throw two-yard dink and dunks. It's hard to throw interceptions when you're throwing 2 yards to your running back. And then when you're throwing mid-range, if you're throwing the ball at the ground, it's hard for people to catch interceptions off the ground because, you know, basically when the ball touches the ground, it's a dead ball. That's not really in the rule. So
McNabb, a.k.a.
Yeah.
McNabb.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's where his ratio, you know, that played a big part in his.
So you're teaching the people about a thing called context.
Yeah, everything has a context. There's circumstances
everything has
that
a
go
context.
Into everything.
So basically, Brett Favre turned the ball over so much because he was throwing the ball so far downfield and he wasn't just throwing dink and dunk.
Absolutely,
he was.
He missed. He threw it to the other team. I'm gonna say this: there's several things that I think about when Tebow comes up. Number one is there's a difference between being a good football player and being good or great or even serviceable at your position. There's certain things that Tebow does that makes him a good football player and a good leader. As a quarterback, I have never really seen anyone with a worse set of skills than him. But now he causes you to kind of ask this question. What's more important, the bottom line of winning or how you look doing it?
I'm by winning. I win here and I win there. Now what?
Yo, it's funny. And also,
now what?
Now also, what? Also, shout out to Maggie in our chat room. She says she loves Tebow. But I had somebody actually on Twitter. I told y'all last week. He told me, he said, I'd rather throw for 400 yards. He said 500 yards and 4 touchdowns and lose than to win the way he's winning.
This person's black.
Absolutely. That's the truth.
Yeah, but what's his name told us that a long time ago. Billy Hoyle told us about that a long time ago. He said black dudes rather look good first, win second. And dude just proved that to you with his comments.
That's what's crazy now. Let's so that we aren't mistaken with being idiots. I don't think anyone on our show, and y'all gentlemen can speak for yourselves, believes that over the long term, with Tebow's current skill set, that he's going to be a consistent winner at the quarterback position. But
no, I don't. I just like to mess with people.
I can tell you as a fan of the team that unless he improves, throwing the ball downfield, then no. I mean, but at the end of the day, if he can make small improvements and our defense can play dominant, then all he has to do is get his Trent Dilfer on.
And that's the key word, Jimmy, improve. And I think dude wants it bad enough to improve.
But
I think he will improve. He's never going to be John Elway, so they can cancel that dream in Denver. I mean,
well,
as a passer, he's never even going to be James Schumer.
I have a question. Does he have the worst throwing mechanics of any starting quarterback ever in the history of the game?
Starting quarterback, he has the worst throwing mechanics of any football player ever. When he throws, it looks
up there
like
with him.
When I
y'all
throw with my
yo,
left.
I'm going to tell you somebody who's up there with him, and y'all going to think I'm crazy. Yo, Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers has learned how to shot put a ball accurate. Yeah.
Philip Rivers' mechanics are terrible. Vince Young's mechanics are terrible. But when they kept Tebow in those little still frames, man, I'm like, how does that even translate? How's that even translate to a forward pass?
Yeah, it looks like he's doing a bear hug in the air before he throws it. Like, it looks like as his throwing motion, at one point when you stop, he's, like, bear hugging. And I feel like his wind-up takes so long. And that's like Jimmy said, the offensive line is actually playing pretty well. Because this time, when my man sit back there and be looking.
And don't know what he's seeing.
He think about it again. He might say a prayer. And then he winds up and throws the rock. And it's, like, 15 seconds later. Since the ball is like,
tell you straight, though. Straight up, when I see still frames of the ball, I think to myself, yo, when did they put pads and helmets in dodgeball?
Yo, how do you throw a forward pass with your off arm just pointed out to the side? Like where do they do that? Like, I don't understand. I don't know. We got some pictures of this on our Facebook page. So if y'all don't know what we're talking about, it's some still Tebow shots on our Facebook page and our blog.
Yeah, so what you're saying is Urban Meyer is a horrible coach of quarterbacks?
No, I'm saying Urban Meyer didn't care about their futures. Urban Meyer wanted to win.
If you watched the way he played at Florida, it was the same thing he's doing now.
Urban Meyer wanted to win.
They just won the games, and that's all Urban Meyer cared about. Like, they just won the games. Like,
His style of play, it's all fine and dandy. It's going to get wins on the short term until defenses adjust. But let's face it, man, if you compare him to, say, a Michael Vick, Michael Vick is about 1,000 times the athlete Tim Tebow is, and he can't get away with just running around, you know, making plays with his legs. So it's going to change. He's going to run into some solid linebacking cores that aren't having it, and they're going to shorten his career unless he learns how to pass downfield.
His style
that may
of
be
play.
The case, but the
winning.
He's not. They're winning because of the defense is playing out of their
own. Yeah. No, you're right.
Playing lockdown football. So
they got Brian Dawkins.
Von Miller is a manimal.
I'll report on the show next week from about what I saw live with Tebow. So.
Yeah,
I'll probably tweet and Facebook while I'm there and make some people mad. Especially because,
y'all man,
you know,
Sue.
They're probably going to beat them.
Y'all man Sue looked like he was in WWE last week when he was stomping the ball or whatever. You know, I thought he was getting ready to drop Hulk, getting ready to do the Hogan leg drop, you know, but he got suspended 2 games for his act.
Not
you
enough.
I think that was a good suspension, or well, you already answered it, so how about the rest of you?
Well, first of all, we didn't hear from PJ and Kill because they weren't on the Thanksgiving show. So what did y'all think about his stomp and then what he tried to tell the media afterwards? Like
what he tried to tell us.
He's trying to catch his balance.
Yo, I heard a couple things. Like you said, I heard he was trying to catch his balance, and he also said that they were holding him, so he was trying to pull his leg free. All right. Like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? To say that, it's funny how people try to lie like they're not on camera. Like, I could see if it was like you were somewhere in a dark alley and nobody saw, and then it's your word against theirs. But you're on camera with 1,000 different camera angles, dog. You can't say that somebody was holding you or you lost your balance. I think he is slightly crazy. And I think that Ndamukong Suh needs to get medical attention. Seriously, no. Like, I think he's slight. Because, now, obviously, I've never met him, but anybody who says that they ever came in contact with him, he's articulate, he's nice, he's kind-hearted, he's like a gentle giant type of dude. But on the field, you always are going to play to the echo of the whistle. You're always going to play, like, with reckless abandonment. But at some point in time, like, you can't just do crazy things and get away with it and just say, I'm just playing hard. The things that he
said
actually,
BJ, he said it himself, though. In an interview, he said it himself. He said, yeah, I think I'm bipolar. He's like, because I'm one person on the field, and I'm another person off the field.
Yo,
as long as
he's my man.
He should keep it the way it is.
Yo, he ripped my man up and banged his head on the turf.
Right, bang. Cause
he did. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, well, first of all, for his post game comments about the incident.
Well, we don't believe you. You need more people.
And he very articulately explained, like, wow, you know, this is what I tried to do, and I'm not a dirty player. I'm not trying to do that. And then he, like, actually believed what he was saying. It almost reminded me, you know, like, the way he went off kind of reminded me of this guy here.
I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairclaw. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Yo, why does he sound like he's from the Caribbean in that clip, though? My man sounded like he was straight from, like, Jamaica or something. When did he pull that accent? All right, go ahead, y'all. Let you finish, man. No one can stop me. There's another can stop
me. That never gets old. Yo, y'all better be glad that he don't switch his neck like an idiot off the field and start being a nice guy on the field.
Yeah, when you hear him talk, he sounds like he's in a focus group with Nnamdi Asamoah and a couple of other more intelligent brothers in the league. Like, he's highly articulate, sounds intelligent, and then he just, I don't know where the disconnect is, man.
Well, in our chat room, we have a comment about this story. Naran says he shouldn't change the way he plays his game. That aggression makes him great. The same way with B-Dawg was one way off the field and one way on the field. And countless ex-Eagles talk about how B-Dawg changed into a different person.
Dawg wasn't dirty.
But I never saw B-Dawg try to A-Town stomp on somebody's collarbone. that's the only thing. I mean, the hits and all that, definitely, because, I mean, just hitting hard and you know, making vicious and ferocious tackles, that's part of it. I wouldn't change that. But, like, for instance, what he did in Green Bay, like, I don't think that is speaking to how he plays the game. I think he was just mad at it. Like, he was trying to get a helmet up. Yeah, the whistle would have been blown like 10 minutes ago. I think that's just like he just got an attitude problem.
Well, PJ, I'm gonna ask you like I asked him last week. With all that being said, would you take him on your team?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In a New York minute. You know what I mean? I don't know. We had to bring a shrink in, and he would have to, right after he did his weight training, because all his aggression should be out by then, we'll have him sit with the therapist for like an hour every Wednesday and talk about the butterflies and how he perceives the little pictures that are on the thing. And you know what I'm saying? Get it all out.
We all know he actually appealed the suspension today.
For
and,
what?
Yeah.
Alan, this must be new because I remember we complained about this on the show before. Roger Goodell is not hearing the appeal. The appeal was being heard by who did they say? Oh, Art Shell.
Oh, the
Art
dude
Shell
that
was,
Art Shell. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the appeals officer. So I'm pretty sure that's new because Goodell had to hear the rumblings from everybody saying, how are you going to be the judge and, you know, the person that's
jury and the
making
executioner.
Like, everything.
Hey, PJ, John Bapp in our chat room said that Sue looked like Joe Pesci from Goodfellas.
Uh-huh. He's getting his,
Actually, you know, the stomp
was
Robert De Niro when
yeah.
he was stomping him in the bar. But it was the same scene when Pesci was beating the boy with the gun and Robert De Niro was stomping him. His foot looked like a hoof when he was kicking him. He was stomping him. Then he going to stomp him with his mutt to my shoes.
Yo, that was the greatest.
And you were stomping him.
That was the greatest stomp scene ever.
Wasn't it? His arm was like a handle, like it was turning, and his foot was like kicking, like he was a toy or something.
Yo,
like,
he was so precise with his stomp, though. He was like, measure it out.
That movie's like 3 hours long, and me and PJ's have watched that every day in college.
Every day, because it laughed hard, like we've never seen the scenes. We didn't see the scenes the last like morning.
And what's worse about that is not even a comedy. That's what we laughing for.
I know. Yo. Oh, man.
That's crazy because, Jimmy, if it was these days, I would have jumped up and tried to stop them from stomping him.
Stop the fight.
Yo, my thing is with Sue, you know what's funny about his situation? Is didn't he just have a self-imposed meeting with Goodell, like that's called him Goodell, like a week and a half prior? So,
yeah,
I mean, he's cognizant of these things. That's why I think he needs therapy, y'all, because, I mean, like, he's, like, trying to understand what he can do to not be perceived this way or not get fined or not, you know. But then he did something like that on Thanksgiving, and I'm like, yo, dog, you just left
now, for that very reason, I thought the suspension would have been even more than 2 games. But you do have to remember, it's the NFL. They only get 16 games, so 2 games is a lot. You know,
yeah,
in comparison
you think what
2 games
did
in basketball, that's nothing.
You think what he did was worse than Albert Haynesworth?
No.
Probably not, because dude put cleats to the boy's face. But everybody talks about the stomp. The stomp is not all he did. He banged his head on the ground.
He banged his head.
He Pesci'd him and he Jimmy'd him all in the same scene. Like, he beat
the old scene right there on the field.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I got a couple more stories we're going to get to real quick in terms of football.
Hey, Jim, just last thing. Those 2 games are going to cost him $164,000 in salary. So go ahead.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. But a couple stories. One we got from the chat room. Somebody says, what are your thoughts on the Giants' second half collapse in 3 straight games? The last game won was against the Patriots. How do you feel about the Giants collapsing in the second half?
That's what the Giants do. I mean, I would say that they still have a chance because the division stinks. The Cowboys have a much easier schedule. Remember, a few weeks ago, I told y'all, like, I'm starting to feel that this division might shape up and the Cowboys might end up winning it. But after the Giants take this smackdown they're going to get this week, they might be able to get it back on track. And hopefully for them, it won't be too late and they can catch the Cowboys. Because the Cowboys have been known to drop a couple that they should win, too. So it almost
happens. Hey, yo, I got something. Hey, yo, Deb, I got something. I think the Giants, this is perfect for them to win because everybody's down on them and they've been playing like garbage. So this might be one of those trap games where they could just shock everybody and then lose the rest of the games for the season.
that seems like
how they play, though. They play better when, like, you know, their backs against the wall.
Yeah. Like the last few years they haven't.
Well, let me ask you another story. Stevie Johnson got fined $10,000 for his end zone celebration. What do you guys think about that?
I think the rest of the league needs to send him $10,000 apiece because you know how many coaches are taking that tape of him roasting Darrell Revis and building condos on the island and coming back and forth and giving people tours.
Yeah, you tried to protect him. You're like, we ain't really toasted him that bad, yo. They sued to the ball 12 times with Revis.
13.
He caught 8 of them. Nobody does that.
And he dropped one that he should that was wide open that would have probably won the end of the game. He dropped.
That's what I was about to say, PJ. It's like he was burning the island down, and then he must have heard a voice from behind the trees, and he just jumped in the lagoon and killed himself. Like, what are you doing? Like, he could have won the game. Matter of fact, how many drops did he have? He had two.
Three.
He had the
three.
One big
yeah.
one in the at the end of the game, though. And right. do y'all know that that was the anniversary of last year when he had that big drop against Pittsburgh?
Against the Pittsburgh, yeah.
So, like that
I didn't
is
know
like his drop season week.
Damn.
That's when you get
yeah.
the drop season.
Yo, I think he has a slight case. I think he has a slight case of the chemical imbalance that T.O. suffers from, and I think it comes out in you know in his game in his play. It affects his play with T.O.'s. It really affected him after the game, like off the field. Stevie
yeah.
Johnson's issue, I think, dude, he's just bipolar throughout the game, like.
Yeah,
I mean, I know I sound like a doctor over here, but I'm really not, y'all.
Diagnosing everybody.
I know, I'm diagnosing everybody from the couch.
No, but the fine is one thing. You know, the penalty wasn't even for, you know, Mock and Plaque. The penalty was for going down to the ground. But
mm-hmm.
I told you the way that it should have been handled. I think Plaxico should have just whooped his ass and got
yeah.
a pass for it. But
I
know,
think
they
talked to Plaxico about it. And he... They talked to Plaxico about it and on the four letters in one of the New York stations, I think the day after, and he said, you know, he's still a good player, you know, he just got a little bit outside of himself, and then he was like,
yeah.
but he actually dropped a couple passes. He said, now the old Plax, they said, what would the old Plax have done? He said that the old Plax would have met him outside of the locker room and gave him a piece of my mind, something he said. He was, but, you know, he's trying to rebuild his image, so he's trying to say the right stuff.
No, plus he was saying he was immature at a certain point in his career, too, and did some stupid stuff.
Yo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, and then your boy LeBron mocked Stevie Johnson mocking Plaxico in the flag football game last night when he scored. He did the same
that
thing.
That was hilarious.
Speaking of which, how did LeBron look?
I was going to say,
how do y'all think LeBron looked as a football player, like getting interceptions and catching touchdowns?
Other tall,
I think he looked like a
flag
football player.
He's playing midgets, though. But, yo, let's get to some more stories, though. Wayne Weaver, he fires Jack Del Rio, then announces the sale of the team. And he has a possible deal with a Chicago businessman to sell the Jaguars, which they say will stay in Jacksonville if this sale goes through. It sounds to me as though the new buyer that he had lined up was like, yo, you got to get rid of this bull first before I say I'm going to buy the team.
That's what I was about
but,
to
what
say.
You guys think
did,
about
he,
that?
Did the dude sign off on it? I mean, what if he was cool with keeping Jack? Because remember, Jack was gone at the end of the season anyway because
yeah.
he got that
yeah.
playoff.
For him to fire Jack and announce that deal, it sounds like dude didn't want Jack. Like, yo, I don't want
dude
him.
Dude didn't even
know,
want him
know.
When the deal was announced. Like, he got
yeah, he
go.
Didn't
want
to talk to him.
Dude had his pin out
PJ,
to sign
say,
on the
bring
contract.
Him back, take it back where you got it.
Bring it where you got it before, get it out of here. Exactly. Bring it back. He said, bring it where you got it before, get it out of here, get it out of here. He said, bring it where you got it before. That's what the boy told the owner. He probably was about to sign on the dotted line and said, look, bring him out of here, bring him out of here. Bring Del Rio out of here. That's what the Goodfellas line, y'all, if y'all ain't there.
Thank
y'all
you.
Wonder what we talking about.
Goodfellas night. We got to get some sound bites from Goodfellas.
But, yo, that's telling me, like, the dude from Chicago must have got some paper, right? And Jack Del Rio must have, like, smothered his chicken. He's like, all right, I'm going to get back at you. He bought the franchise and then got him fired. But anyway.
Yeah. And he bought it for $760 million. And this dude's name is Shahid Khan. Like, that was surprising to me because, you know, in America.
That's why they ain't
I wouldn't
why
think they were
here.
Giving
ah!
I was trying to think they were giving an NFL franchise to anybody named Shahid. But
that's why they
Ali Shahid Muhammad. Ali Shahid Muhammad, you can say I had
to he's like
out.
A Pakistani businessman. So.
Good
oh,
him. God.
But
anyway,
do you think, because this was like a handshake deal as far as keeping the team in Jacksonville, you think he might just, you know, go back on that and move the team after he buys it?
He's going to move the team.
Yeah.
He might move to
Islamabad.
He gonna, I'm about to say, he's going to move it to the Dubai or something. That's going to be the first Dubai football team. So he's gonna
Dubai
be playing.
Jaguars.
They're going to be playing with helmets and aprons on. Skirts.
the Dubai Camels. Come on, man.
Dubai Camels. They still gonna be in the sand.
Yeah, that's no sense.
They still gonna be in the sand. Like, you gonna be able to get out that guy. No cleats, I. No cleats. You play
yo,
with
that's gonna
out.
Be better than the Boise State, Joan. They gonna have a light brown color.
It's gonna be sand kicking. As soon as they hike the ball, it's gonna be sand flying on like a big sand dune. You can't see nothing
yo.
But sand flying around.
We gonna get
I'm staying out of this. Y'all tripping, man.
We gonna get
the Dubai fired. Camels, man. Jay-Z gonna be Jay-Z face gonna be the mascot. The Dubai Camels.
Smoking a cigarette. Like, come on.
Smoking a cigarette with a Yankee hat on.
Known to make their likeness available.
Joe Jackson, yo, is he playing his way out of his contract, or has he been played his way out of his contract, or was he never going to get a contract in the first place?
It ain't going to happen in Philly unless they did sign Vic to $100 million, but at least
I wonder
he was
what they franchise him next year.
That's possible, unless
wonder,
you know.
I don't know
because you don't have you know you get one franchise tag. They might find
think,
somebody else that they needed more for.
Yeah, get rid of him
and concentrate
like,
on Shady.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to pay
yeah,
Shady.
Man.
They got to pay Shady.
Yeah. Shady got
to pay
Shady.
Yo, my question is this, though. Like, it's like I've never seen an athlete go, like, from to be, like, such a beloved player in the city to being someone that everybody hates that fast. Like, when the season started, everybody was screaming for him to get paid.
I can tell you exactly what it is, too, Jimmy.
They flipped
alligator
on him, like,
it's a blue collar town, man.
It's a blue collar town, and you show
that's
that you
don't
have no heart.
People don't understand in Philly. Exactly. If you're not working hard, Philly,
yeah.
you know, Philly people turn on you quick. And I don't
you
see why.
Got no heart.
I don't see why other fans around the country look down on Philadelphians because of that. Why should we keep loving dudes who, you know?
Because the rest of the country is caught up by ESPN. Dude is an ESPN highlight factory, but he does not consistently produce. And that's not going to fool a more educated fan base. They're not caught up in the bombs because, dude, you don't get first downs.
Yeah, but he don't play with no heart.
Well, you said somebody said a one-trick pony. All they're doing is dropping coverage back to, like, Broad and Patterson on the street and just so Sean can't run past him. And then he almost taking him out of the game in some situations because we saw him alligator arm a couple balls this past weekend, and he will do that. He doesn't want to come across the middle like that. So
yeah, I mean, you
I
see him every time there's – there could be a receiver, I mean, a D-back anywhere in a 3 feet vicinity. He's balling up. Like a little, like he dropped two touchdown passes. Somebody's telling me, "Are y'all hard on dude for one game?" Like, come on, this is not one game, man. Like, we
put it like this.
I hate when people who don't watch the game sit there and tell us that you mad.
I know, see one game and be like, "Why are you mad?"
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you what ruined Deshaun's career. It's somebody down in Atlanta named Dante Robinson. Because ever since that violent hit, he don't even want to get jammed at the line no more. He don't want nobody coming nowhere near him on the field.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I tell you what, you might be right, but on top of that, with the fact that he's getting $600,000 a year, that's only exacerbating the issue, and now he's doing what he did this past weekend, and that just don't fly here. I mean,
yeah,
I understand he is underpaid, but he is getting paid. Like, I mean, you did decide to come back, too. Right?
But is
you know,
he now? Is he now? Because at first you could use that cliche like he outplayed his contract, but now I think he's playing his way back into that contract.
You like a $600,000. I still think he's probably worth more than $600,000.
Yeah.
Even though he is
he's a threat.
Because
he's
such a game changer. Yeah, he's still a game changer and a threat, but he's not a complete wide receiver to me. I mean, it's hard.
Yo,
I don't want to sound like I'm hating on him, but it's something
Devin
that he's not complete. He's a game changer, but he's not complete.
Devin Hester with a little bit better hands. Neither one of them can run routes. And they both are dangerous in the kicking game. Yo, I've never
seen
two small
dudes.
What
you basically said
was,
if you want to pay me $600,000, I'm only going to give you $600,000.
Yeah, and Nye in the chat room said, no excuse. Wes Welker don't have a contract either, and he's balling, and he live over the middle of the field.
He's a scrappy player, though.
Matt Forte.
Yo,
it's a few people that don't got him.
Yeah, but you know Belichick, though. He He's like a cult leader. He can get them dudes to do anything over there.
Speaking
he has
of dudes
playing receivers, D-backs, they out there hitting
cut,
people and blitzing quarterbacks.
Speaking of Wes Welker, why doesn't dude get any conversation around him being one of the best in the game?
Because he's white.
He's not. Because he's really not, if you really
think about it. Let me say this, and I was one of the main people saying this. I'm like, listen, Randy Moss opens the field up for that dude. Once Randy's gone, he's not going to be as effective or efficient. Yo, he's leading the league.
Yo,
there's no
the
help.
Same reason Jordy Nelson gets no respect.
Because he's white. But Jordy hasn't been doing it as long as Wes. Wes is
I wouldn't put Wes Welker up there with, like, the best receivers in the league. He's really productive because of what
Fitz,
he does.
You wouldn't put him up with, like, Fitz and
yeah,
those
not,
guys,
yeah,
would you, Brad?
Of course. Like, I'm not going to put him up there. Because he's carved out his little niche. He's carved out his little niche, and he's going to kill you over the middle of the field.
I also like to see him play without Brady, too. Let's see if he does that without Brady.
That's
I think the system lends to what he does. Yeah, the system lends to what he does because you have – everybody else working to get the middle of the field open so Welker and those tight ends can just get off, and the ball is coming right to you every time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yo, it's going to hit you in the mouthpiece. If you don't put your hands up, you're going to get hit right in the chin with Brady throwing it at you. So,
all
you
got to
do is put your hands up.
Now, I don't know his yardage.
Nah,
right. Austin, what's his yardage? You know what I'm saying? Like,
he's had a stack. He had a stack before going into last week, I think.
Okay.
He's
a couple points board
he
up.
Has good
first
numbers
off,
now.
He doesn't play on the outside. Rarely do you hear about somebody being if they don't play on the outside, and he can't stretch.
He's what Freddie Mitchell was supposed to be.
No teams going to the games scared of Wes Welker.
Yeah, even though they should be, because that little short pass, not even Welker personally or individually, they should just be afraid of
that
short
offense.
Passing game by the Patriots.
Yo, I ain't trying to sound like John Gruden, yo, but how nice is Brady, yo? I was watching him,
with 11 games played, 10 games started, he leads the league in receptions at 82, leads the league in yardage at 1,143.
He get his yak.
Averages 100. He averages 103.9 yards a game.
But do you see
tight end
like
is
how
unfair.
Many? Exactly. I was about to say. Do you see how many passes he catches when he's like wide open? Because he's getting matched up on tight ends or safeties that's trying to come up and cover him.
Tight
like,
ends. You mean matched up on
linebackers? He has an advantage. He's tough. I don't
or linebacker sometimes.
Yeah.
Because
I don't want to
tight
end
is wreaking havoc.
Yo, back to Brady.
Gronkowski.
There's a context for everything. Context.
There is.
Yo, Brady is nice, yo. He throws people open. It looked like he had a Ginsu knife last week. He was just chopping them up.
He throws it so in stride. And that's you got to throw. You have to be accurate. And that's what it's not even to get on McNaught at all because he's having a bad day today.
Yo.
But it's just in that offense, you need to throw the receivers in stride for it to be effective.
I'm gonna be honest
and Brady
with you,
is just amazing at that.
I haven't seen accuracy like that since Montana, yo. It's like McNabb played in my city for a dime, and now my quarterback is Tebow. So when I watch him play, I'm like, come on, man. His accuracy is
yo,
crazy.
Yo, let's go back. Welker's eighth season. He's gonna be over 7,000 yards. He may well join the 10,000 yard club.
So,
where does that put him?
He will.
Like, so,
it puts him in. They still don't put him nowhere.
He says they still don't put him nowhere.
They don't put him in
no,
combat.
I mean,
that's where they put him. He's tough though. I'm trying not to say all of this without you know. I don't want to take all of his credit, but because he's tough. But you
he's
know,
a scrappy player.
Just by asking that, yeah, exactly.
Eddie.
By asking that question,
yeah.
You know,
Eddie.
I can't put him up
Eddie.
There with the other dudes. He's not making those kind of catches.
Andre Johnson, Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald.
Megatron.
When you get to that level, sometimes you make your quarterback look better.
Right.
In this case, it's definitely the quarterback making Wes Welker look better.
Okay.
But he's tough.
Leading the league,
80
catches, 1,143 yards.
Burn down the the world.
Okay, I see. Austin's a believer now. You would. I like
no,
that.
No, no, I'm not. It's not a matter of me being a believer. It's just with the numbers that he puts up, no one says anything.
Yeah,
nothing.
Austin was the lead. Austin was the lead chatter when
Randy
was there. You was the lead chatter.
Yeah.
We just took your.
Well, I've spent a lot of time. I've spent a lot of time kind of watching him now. And him doing it without Randy, you can't say that there's anyone there drawing double teams. They don't run a lot of deep routes. So a lot of the stuff you're saying about him being open and them just leaving, that was accurate when Randy was there. But now
– And you also have to throw in –
I think there are more weapons, though. Like,
yeah, and you also have to throw in how long Tom Brady stands back there on a lot of plays.
Absolutely.
Can't
absolutely
cover that.
And he does throw him open, and he does end up – I say – 40% of the time, he does not have a corner covering him. It's either a linebacker or a safety. But I'm still the numbers are interesting. It's a compelling case.
Okay, well let's say he's a top possession receiver.
There
are no more possession receivers.
I got him right above Freddie Mitchell.
He's one of the best slot receivers out there. But I can't put him in.
He's right above Chris T. Jones.
Well, let's just go ahead and call him. I'll call him the best slot receiver in the league.
He's the best slot receiver on the Patriots. How about that?
Props given. Now everybody stop crying.
Yo, last thing about football. Well, last thing about football. Let me ask you guys a question. What do you guys think about tonight's game? Like, why should I even watch this game? The Eagles and Seahawks.
Dog, if it's
Eagles,
a nice reality show,
they got
you probably
nice.
Shouldn't even watch it.
They got nice uniforms. There's gonna be some nice, you know. Seahawks got nice helmets.
I'm gonna make an admission on national radio that everyone is gonna hear. Yo, I'm so frustrated and my head hurts so much. Pause. I forgot the game was on.
That's bad.
Think about
how bad the Eagles are, y'all.
You know,
think about how bad the Eagles are. They've lost the last 8 of their 9 home games. Like, how bad are you when you lose 8 of 9 home games? Like, you lose your advantage. Yo, I don't understand. This team is just deplorable, cuz. There aren't enough words for me, sort of like Brad Phil's, to express. I don't even have the vocabulary. My vocabulary isn't that strong.
How did it get so bad so fast? Who do you put the – there's a lot of blame to go
it's
around.
So much.
And I know Andy tells you every week that he has to take all the blame. But what do you guys think? How did it get so bad so fast?
I mean,
Vince Young has more interceptions than he has sales in his body.
I'm about to say, you got to start with the QB, just like you do when they're good. So,
all of them.
I mean,
both
to me, yeah, to me, he's going backwards. I don't know if he's going backwards. They caught on when he's going backwards, though. He's not playing the way he played last year. And I think they may have jumped the gun. I look at it now, and I mean – hindsight is always 20/20, but I think they jumped the gun with that contract with him.
They could have franchised him, right?
Yeah, they could have franchised him. He wouldn't have been happy, but they could have done that. I mean, he should have been.
He was 40 million guaranteed and 100 M's.
Who did they use their tag on this year if it wasn't him?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Might not have used
Riley Cooper.
Somebody on a low like Trent.
Riley Cooper.
Riley Cooper wished they would franchise him. Riley Cooper is praying they do that. But it's like, all right, I say the quarterback. Yo, our defense is a donut. You know how a donut on the outside is like a Krispy Kreme is like all the icing and the glaze and it's like nice and fluffy, but in the middle is nothing. Well, our D line and our cornerback, supposedly our cornerbacks are supposed to be like the outside, the glazed part of the donut. The hole in the donut is our safety and our linebackers. So our defense is either a U or a donut, but there's nothing in the middle. However you want to, and I don't understand how you're going through a season with that.
I remember they tagged him and then they gave him a contract.
Yeah, that's what.
So once you do that, you can't use it on anybody else, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that was the case.
They tagged Vic and gave him an extension in week 4.
Okay. So that's what I remember. I'm like, so who? I guess you can't use it. You can't take it off somebody and then.
You can't Indian give that job.
Yeah, because everybody else is already
Let me read you some of the reasons that come on from our chat room. They says Andy Reid's bad play calling, Mike Vick's injury drama, the new offensive coordinator, taking bad
I – mean
they have committed a lot of bad
penalties. The new offense? Oh, you mean defense.
Probably defense.
It was, Yeah, but he came from the, I don't know. That's what it said in the chat, but he was offensive line coach. But anyway,
no, but that's my question. I actually like what A. Bramble 30 said, because everybody else out there is just Andy. Like, when is anybody gonna like? Where's
no
the accountability for the players?
For the players.
Andy makes his mistakes. He doesn't run the ball enough. He has one of the best weapons in the league, and Shady McCoy, and he doesn't get the ball enough. He has his flaws, but what about the players who are out there missing tackles and missing assignments?
This is true. But, yo, you want to know what's so frustrating about Andy Reid is that, yo, Shady will be killing the other team. Not like they're not having success. He'll be killing them, and he still stops running the ball. Like they're being stopped, and he's like, look, we're not going to run it because they're shutting it down today. Yo, Shady will be chopping the other team up, and then he's so
good. He dropped Vince Young back 50 times last week.
Yo, coming out of the game cold when the ball got hurt, he dropped him back to throw a streak. Come on, what are you doing, cuz?
Yo,
Andy Reid loves the pass, cuz.
Yo, we were losing that game. They was dropping. They was dropping Vince back, and it seemed like they were letting Vince call his own plays. Yo, everybody just go deep. Everybody just go deep.
I look at Vince on the sideline. I look at Vince, and you know how we call the guys monkeys, where Michael Vick is very resembling of a gorilla, and Vince Young is more resembling of a chimpanzee. Well, I look at Vince on the sideline, and I see him, and he looks like, you know, he throws his interceptions, he runs off, he claps, you know, gives people high fives, tries to keep his spirits up. He looks like he's trying. Then he just gets on the field, and what makes it even worse is that his form is deplorable. And his accuracy, yo, like I said via email to y'all, I don't think Vince Young should start the NFL no more. Exactly.
Never throw your shit.
Our quarterbacks are playing under the eighth.
I know we got to move on to the second, Jim, but I just want to make one point in this. The person who gets no blame in this, who just gets off scot-free, is Jim Washburn. He brought in the wide nine. And the reason why the defense was getting gashed in the first half of the season, and he takes no accountability for it. Everybody just goes at Juan because he's the defensive coordinator, but I think dude is a figurehead. I think Washburn has more power than him. Like, yo, this will be running, and you can't do nothing about it. Because if you're getting all the heat, he would have changed the defense back in, like, week three or four, because he's like, look, man, your thing is not working, so... You know, my job is on the line. So, and if he had the power to do that, don't y'all think he would have done that? Like, why would you let this go on? You get all the blame for it. Nobody says anything negative about Washburn.
Yo.
Even when you bring his name up, people
told
still don't
bring
say anything negative.
Yo, I'm gonna tell you straight up. A lot of the fire Andy contingent type of fans don't even know who Washburn is.
Well, last thing, we got to move on, but last thing I want to ask you guys, how do you feel about Asamoah after this season? Is he less than what you thought? Is he just what you thought, or what?
I mean, his season is less than what I expected, but I'm not, you know,
I ain't ready to knock him off.
Make judgment on him. I give him another year.
Not yet. Wait, next year for that, right?
Yeah.
To me, from what I see of him, because this is the most I've seen of him, I just don't think he should be compare with Revis as much. I mean, I understand that he's more of a man corner. He's in a lot of zone. But, I mean, I don't know. I guess I got to see some more. But, I mean, to me, my perception is very underwhelmed in terms of what I was expecting from him. And I don't know, the only thing I learned about him this year
is that Victor Cruz is his father.
Luke, I am your father.
Enough about that, man.
Who wins tonight? Eagles win tonight.
Oh. Okay.
I'm gonna just go ahead. Yeah, y'all better get y'all picks done.
Yo, I'm glad you said that.
I put mine. You know, I'm gonna go with the Eagles just because, like, yo.
Just because of the Seahawks.
Tavares Jackson starting, y'all? Or am I?
Yeah.
So you got Tavares Jackson against Vince Young? Is that one of the worst QB battles ever?
The NFL Network wants me to watch Vince Young into Garbage Jackson. Vince Dung into Garbage Jackson.
Go mano-a-mano. Yo, I'm going to call it a tie. I'm gonna call it a tie. That's my pick.
You think we're gonna tie with the Seahawks?
Yeah, it's gonna be a tie.
I have a very, very, very bad feeling about the Seahawks starting running back beast mode, because our linebackers have a problem with guys that can go into beast mode.
Well, if we lose tonight, man, we get up in that Andrew Luck sweepstakes.
True.
I know.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I know who doesn't win tonight, and that's a football fan. They don't win.
Well,
you know, all
hey, man, I don't know
college
if
basketball
the
on
dream
tap
thing.
For tonight. College basketball
dream
on tap for tonight. All right, so let's let's move it on and talk a little. Yes, they are. And before we get into the basketball talk, I'm going to let you guys know that you can now hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. The latest episode is always available for you, no syncing needed, and no memory storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Just click on the Stitcher logo on our website, warroomsports.com, and listen or download to your mobile phone directly from that page. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So, fellas, the lockout is over. Y'all want to talk about a few of the highlights of the deal? I got the whole deal here and sitting in front of me. So, first of all, the length of the agreement is 10 years, and it has a mutual opt-out clause. Either side can opt out in 2017. So I'm thinking, and y'all can give me your opinion on this, I'm thinking that this deal doesn't last 10 years. I think somebody's going to end up not liking what's going on, and somebody's going to opt out to just see if they can get something tweaked or something better in the deal, because a lot of players really aren't feeling the deal, but their leverage was gone, and they're kind of upset with Billy Hunter right now because they're saying he's trying to convince us that this is a good deal. Like, we're going to ratify it, but don't treat us like we're stupid. Like, we know that.
Don't try to adamicus to us.
Exactly. So do you guys see this going until 2022, or do y'all think that opt-out clause
absolutely
is going to come into effect?
Yeah,
I think the opt-out clause is going to be in effect, and I think that it's really not going to change anything because the owners will continue to be idiots and give contracts to those who don't deserve them.
You know what, Jim? I think you're exactly right, man. I don't think that's going to change because now the owners have to use, 85% of their – you have to use 85% of the salary.
Yeah, 85% of your salary, yeah.
Yeah, when before you only had to use, 75% of it.
75, yep.
Yeah,
So the contract might get worse.
For some breaking news. I don't know how breaking it is, but Rolando McClain for the Raiders, he just got arrested on assault charges. He was in a fight in Alabama and shot his gun at somebody.
Damn. What's wrong with these dudes? Maggie said the same thing. She said, WTF is wrong with these guys. That's the exact same thing I just said.
You know why we're going to still be back in the same situation like y'all said? I'm going to tell you where it's coming from. And, Jimmy, you might know where I'm headed with this. As long as these kids that are coming into the NBA and are raised on this processed chicken, they're going to continue to eat the steroids and the preservatives in the chicken. So you're going to continue to have dudes that are 7'15" that can jump out of the sky, coming out of high school, going, say what? Yeah, exactly. Going to college, not really prove anything, and then owners are going to be so excited by their size, that they're going to give them these crazy contracts because they think it's going to be the next, Shaq. The agile Shaq, they think they're
going to
get. And it's all
because
of the chicken. There you go.
Damn chicken. Let me give you a couple of more highlights from the joint. As we know, the revenue split went down from 57 to 51.15. Players receive 51% of basketball-related income, but that's just for this year. In later seasons, the players receive 49 to 51% of BRI, which is 50% plus or minus 60.5% of the amount by which BRI exceeds or falls short of projections. So 1% of BRI from the player share is used to fund a new pool for post-career benefits. So this is kind of a win for the owners, of course, because
after losing 370 million, 340, and 300 in the past three seasons, you know, they basically they got more of the revenue share. But I think it's even better for them because in subsequent years, the revenue share could even go down for the players. But at the same time, that depends on the kind of revenue they're making. So, I mean, I wouldn't call it a win-win. I still would think that's a win for the owners when you take a six-point drop in revenues. But they ran out of leverage. Another thing is the amnesty clause. They had one in the 2005 CBA where one player could be waived prior to the start of that season when they made the deal. Now, the teams can waive one player prior to the start of any season, but you can only use it once, like throughout the whole CBA. So it's like use it wisely. Like if you don't use your amnesty clause this year, you can use it any time from now until 2022. But once you use it, then you know, it's up.
So you'd be salty if the deal don't last to 2022. You really be salty. You still hold on to your job.
Yeah,
that's like
I think people would use it by 2017, knowing that you can opt out by then. You know what I mean?
Yo, that's like you having a draw four in your hand and somebody saying Uno, and you ain't you sitting on the other side. You know what I'm saying?
Now that I think is definitely a win for the owners because it gives you the opportunity to drop a bad contract. And a lot of people in Philly were screaming for that amnesty clause to be used on Elton Brand, but the Sixers are going to use theirs on Andreas Nocioni.
I'm laughing, somewhere Joe Johnson is sitting in his house sweating.
I know.
He's like, damn.
Yo, do I got the receipts for these? He's looking for receipts in his room somewhere. He's taking some stuff back.
I hope Chris got receipts.
Joe Joe safe.
Yeah.
Is it Joe safe? Elton Brand safe, though? Because Elton Brand is committing robbery without a firearm.
Right. He's safe, though, because the Sixers plan on using it on Andreas Nocioni, I believe he only has 1 year left on his contract, so I kind of think that's a waste.
I think you use it to get out of a very bad contract. Yo, how much is Elton Brand making this year? Anybody know? Because I know whatever it is.
He's making 40. Like 18. Like, he's making like 18 or something like that.
That's egregious for Elton Brand, man. Do you realize how many brands is better than what he was last year, probably?
I mean, I know Nocioni is earning like $5 million to do absolutely nothing.
Nobody from Duke should get $18 million a year.
Yeah. he's getting 17, 18. I mean, he's not playing up to what we expect from his contract. But he's giving you something. Nocioni's giving you nothing.
I mean, yeah, you can look at it that way.
A lot of people didn't even know Nocioni played for the Sixers. That's when you know you're good. People are like,
yo,
hey, y'all got with Nocioni? Thought he was with the Bulls.
Yo, man. That's crazy that Elton Brand is making $17 million. Not that Elton Brand, like, with the Clippers. This Elton Brand. Because Elton Brand had a couple years where he was, like, a, you know, all-star caliber player. But this dude right here making $17 million is kind of crazy.
This year, he can no longer run nor jump. He can't get off the ground. He has long arms, but that's not good enough with the monkeys you got jumping, blocking shots, boxing him out. He just don't have it no more. I mean, it's funny because this past season, he showed little spots of some all right work. He was giving out a little bit of work. But then,
and that's probably why they're not going to use it on him.
The way he scores, I really don't think he needs his athleticism. He's a high post player, so he's getting the ball at the elbow extended, and he's shooting Jays. Jay is right. Where it comes into play athletically is on defense. He's not going to be able to defend anybody. Murray's going to have a field day on dude.
Yes, and you're right, Austin, because, you know, when he came into the league, he was always shorter than the guy he was guarding, but he was very athletic. You're shorter than the dudes by, like, 4 or 5 inches, and you can't get off the ground, and your sneakers cold. Yeah. So it's like... Like the whole
So now what that means is you gotta pick up that production. Like on the offensive end, if you can get 18 a game out of dude and 8 boards, then I'm not saying the contract is worth it, but you're getting somewhat of a return.
Yeah, the contract will never be worth it, but it might not be worth it to use the amnesty clause and let somebody else sit back and take money for, like, not even getting off the bench.
I put it like this. If he can give us what David Lee gave the Knicks that year when he fooled people and maybe a little bit of what he's been out in Golden State, I'd be cool with that.
David Lee was putting up crazy numbers that year.
Yeah, Elton Brand scares me defensively, though.
Elton Brand can only put up 18 if it's 2K. This ain't 2K, it's all right, though. But 18 a game, he got to get paid $1 million per point he scores.
All right, so when we talked a few minutes ago about the minimum salary and what they have to spend, it's 85%, but that's for this year and next year. It's going to be at least 90% of the cap in the later years of the agreement.
Oh, my God.
So, therefore, they need people to use it.
Irrenewable. 5 years, 25 million.
Now, that goes back to
Groundhog Day.
Because of this, people are still going to be getting overpaid because they're going to have to use the money.
Man, we went through all this lockout.
Groundhog Day, man. It's going
to
happen all over again.
It didn't solve nothing. This whole thing solved nothing. Watch.
All right, I'm going to read to you guys the luxury tax. The new rules for that, and tell me how you think of it. They really went crazy.
Yeah, they went in. They went
Remember
in
when
on the
2005 CBA. The teams just played, a dollar for every dollar their salary was above the luxury tax threshold. Now you're gonna pay a dollar for every dollar, but that's this year. But next year, you're gonna pay an incremental tax that increases with every $5 million above the tax threshold. So if you go $5 million over, you're going to be paying $1.50. Another $5, $1.75, $2.50, $3.75, et cetera. And then teams that are repeat offenders who are paying at least four, who paid the tax at least four out of the five past season, they're going to have a tax that's higher, which is going to be a dollar more at each increment. So instead of $1.50 and $1.75, it's going to be $2.50, $2.75. So they're trying to get teams like Jimmy's team, the Lakers, to stop spending so much over the cap, so these small market teams like Charlotte.
It's not going
to
stop it.
That's a lot of money, though, John. That's a
lot
of money.
What they're really trying to do is
just
going at.
I know they get a lot of money, but that's a lot of money.
They're going at the mid-level exception bums. They're going at the mid-level exception so you don't overpay around our
stuff. For those big markets that make revenue the way they do, I think it'll slow them down a little bit, but not as much as they think. Like, yo
under
Dr.
that
Buss
model,
was,
though,
so
Jimmy, you can have a $3 million salary that equates to a $15 million expenditure.
I understand that.
That's bad business. That's bad business.
listen, Jim, let me tell you the difference, though. For the Lakers tax bill in 2011, when it was a dollar-for-dollar thing, it cost Jerry Buss $19.9 million. Under the new system, being that far over that tax line is going to cost them like 44.6 million. Like 44.6 million. And if they were a repeat offender, which they probably would be, it's going to cost them like $64.5 million.
No, I get.
I know you
saying,
want your team to win, but it's going to
no,
slow them down.
I'm talking about from a realistic standpoint, not from because I want them to compete, but I think that some of the owners will, like, yo, pay. I mean, Mike won't, but some of the other owners will, like, yo.
Mike can't. Mike probably wrote this rule himself.
Just call it the Jordan rule.
if Mike had to pay that, he would have to go into his personal stash to pay that. Like,
Mike ain't touching his personal stash for his kids, let alone his
team.
He's going to have to win that in Vegas.
He probably got Nike paying his kids. Like,
Mike want to compete at any cost.
Nike probably paid his kids allowance. All right, so let me see another highlight of the joint. The new contracts. New contracts can be, I don't know, we might have to, like, write this out and put it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, forget that, yo. Talk about, before we get off, talk about some of these trade rumors, yo.
Yeah. First of all, Rajon Rondo, or Rayon Rondo,
everybody.
We like to take the J out because you don't have one. Rayon is in everybody's trade rumors. But today, Danny Ainge is going to come out and say,
oh, no, we love Rondo, so he has nothing to worry about. He's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's easy to say after you shopped him to, like, 25 teams and you didn't get anybody to fight. now we love the dude. Hey, come on, man. Come on, Danny.
He's like, yeah, people always call us about Rondo, but we love him.
He's lying. They shot that dude to half the league in the past.
Nobody want him with no Jay because he don't. Yo, if you have a point guard with no Jay, everybody on your roster along with him got to be manimals when it comes to scoring. Dude can't score. I mean, he can score, but, man.
He can't shoot. It's unorthodox. He gets it in different ways.
Yeah.
Loose ball.
Actually, for these CBA rules, I actually have a link. I'm going to just post it on our Facebook page so everybody can read the new policies themselves. But Chris Paul's agent actually said that he – I mean, it's no secret that he wants to be in New York. So his agent told the Hornets to trade him to New York because he's not going to re-sign in New Orleans. So
I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised by that because Chris Paul doesn't seem like the huggy, cuddly, play with my friends type dude.
Why doesn't he? Every time you see him on TV, he with LeBron and Carmelo.
Yo, he's another one.
He's exactly that dude.
All they jocks. He's exactly that dude. Yo, he's a
–
yo, you seen that Carmelo wedding, yo?
Yeah,
like
speaking of that,
group.
What do y'all think of like everybody in the league being best friends now? I don't, you know,
yeah, they're
you
all
be
homies.
Friends. I just think that it's gonna it takes away from competition, man.
Yeah.
People may
like
think that's wrong,
dude,
but I think every time they hype up a big matchup, it ends up being a dud. And that's probably why
love
these dudes don't go with each other like they hate each other. And I'm
gonna
say,
yeah,
have
if
to
I can't
hate
win,
each
I
other,
want my man. To,
Exactly. Even a little deeper than that, it's like
too
yo,
chummy. Too
great,
chummy.
Greatness is born from adversity and struggle and competition. And when you don't have competition foster adversity and struggle, where are you going to get your greatness from?
Yeah, everybody's buddies, man. That's
everybody's
like,
buddies.
That's
everybody's
like
friends.
Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley were good friends. We all know that now. But you really couldn't tell back when they played because
yeah.
they tried to rip each other's
Mike
heads
still
off.
Thought he was better. Mike still thought he was better than Chuck, and it must be hard being Mike's friend because Mike let Chuck know that he was inferior all the time.
I don't think Mike got no real friends in real life.
Yeah,
nobody really like Mike.
He's got people to say I'm cool with Michael Jordan.
I think CP3 also he hates defense so much that he was like, yeah, where can I go where I don't have to play defense?
Yeah, but coach don't even care. We're just going to score
we'll
so much.
Practice it.
I mean, yeah.
We don't need to do lateral drills in
practice.
Exactly. No lateral movement drills at all. Shoot.
Yeah. Yo, they got it.
Yeah.
Yo, so think about
that.
He's
going to get there anyway, and I think it's one of those. Okay.
They got CP3. That's very little defense. They got Amare. That's absolutely no defense. And then they got Melo, who's never played defense in his life. Yo, they not stopping nobody.
Yeah. Melo ain't
they
going
to be exciting to watch, though. They going to be exciting to watch, though, yo.
Yeah.
Yo, do y'all remember that time? Y'all remember that time when they were playing the Lakers and Melo got down in a mean defensive stance, slapped the floor and all, and Kobe laughed at him?
He got his Scottie Pippen on.
Yeah.
Shorts.
Yo, he didn't know that he wasn't playing D. He thought
he
that
had to slap the floor.
Yo, Kobe laughed at him and went right. Dunked the ball.
Yo, Melo never played. Yo, Melo didn't play defense in high school or college. Like, Melo just doesn't believe it. Yo, and Amari may be worse. Amari acts like defense is against his religion, yo.
Yeah, he sits down. When they go down the court on D, he be like, all right, I'll be up here.
All that athleticism.
I'll be up here when y'all come back down.
That's why he don't grab boards the way he's supposed to.
And I hear that Samuel Dalembert and Shane Battier are trying to get down to Miami. They're trying to jump
Shane
on that bandwagon.
Boy. First
yeah,
off,
but,
how they gonna afford Dalembert? He's making like $100 million.
I think
his name made me frown. When I hear his name, I frown.
Maybe they might amnesty clause him, and then the Heat pick him up for cheap.
Yo,
know.
He'd be a definite amnesty clause.
He's got way over. I might know what his contract is doing, but it's about that time, fellas, for us to get
here. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for joining us in the war room this evening. special thanks to everybody who participated in the chat room, Facebook, Twitter, and by calling in. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to the greatest sports show ever produced on U.S. soil. Have a great time watching the Dream Team on NFL Network. And have a great sports weekend, yo. Yo, no self-destruction this weekend. Have a great sports weekend. And
yo,
look, until next week, everybody. I mean, we're going to do it.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
self-destruction.
It really ain't the rap audience's bugging. It's one of two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap, the name. MC's the light here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Sugar brother's life with a knife, that's his life. Cry, cause he died of trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man. Cause that's
self-destruction.
Funky fresh dress to impress, ready to party. Money in your pocket, dying to move your body. To get inside, you pay the whole $10. Got safe with a razor blade, tape to your collar. Leave the guns in the crack and the knobs alone. MC lights on the microphone. Bum rushing and pushing, snatching and taxing. I can't understand why brothers don't be maxing. There's only one disco, they'll close one more. You ain't guarding the door. So what you got a gun for? Do you rob the rich and give to the poor? Yo, daddy-o. Who's the move?
Straight from the mouth. And daddy-o,
do a crime,
end up in jail,
and gotta go.
Cause you could do crime and get paid today, and tomorrow you're behind bars in the worst way.
Far from your family,
cause you're locked away.
Now tell me,
do you really think crime pays?
Even on taking what your brother has?
You little sucker, you talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity, cause if not, then you're with soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed. C-rap race will be lost without a trace, or a clue, but what to do is stop the violence and kick the science down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is formed and you learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach the East is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid. It's
self-destruction. It ain't for self-destruction. Self-destruction.
Fight it.
and fussing. Heaven's at the door, so there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together before we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another, it broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulty, people. Love your brother, treat him as an equal. They call us animals, I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. Take heed before I leave to what I'm saying, or we'll all be on our knees praying.
Heavy deep, deep in the heart of the matter. The self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jack in jail, which is the best deal ever duck. There's no one around, cause in jail you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction. Yes, we urge to merge. We live for the love of our people, the hope they get along. Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
Boys, don't be running around.
Set in your head, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect.
Come on.
To revolve, to evolve, to self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves.